This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Tyler Glasnow hurting his forearm because he can no longer use the sticky stuff from the 206. It's like me running a Ponzi scheme and getting mad that I can no longer steal money. What a clown. It's not a very good excuse, is it, Paul?
It's the worst excuse. Look, the game be the game, and I totally understand blaming Rob Manfred for everything. It works, and it might work for some people, but that's what this is. That's all it is.
It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to bring in Michael Bumpus for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Now here's your host, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42.
Morning, Bump. How are you now?
What's up, fellas? I am doing well. How about yourselves?
Not so bad. You actually sent me a text last night about Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah.
What are you thinking about this whole situation?
So I laughed at him at first. I'm like, man, he is throwing a fit right now. He is angry. He's looking to point the finger. And then I tried to relate it to just sports. And I'm like, okay, maybe it's like when you don't have a golf glove out there. You know, us amateurs, sometimes you forget your glove. You don't want to go to the clubhouse and buy a $25 glove. So you say, you know what, I'm just going to go out here and swing it on a hot day and you lose grip. It affects your grip. I think it's more of a mental thing for him, though. He just didn't feel right. He couldn't get his stickiness that he's used to having. Something happened. He wanted to blame somebody. He blamed the MLB and them cracking down on the stickiness. I just like that he blasted everybody because, of course, I've used it. Everybody's done it. I'm like, that's what I'm talking about. Keep it 100. I appreciated that.
If you were a pitcher, would you mess with baseball right now? Like, just get out there on the mound and start touching everything. Like, go through the hole, like, dig in your pockets, sit there, scratch. Like, go to your hat a few times, sit there rubbing the ball for a good solid minute. Like, I'd just be like, and then come out there, like, I'm clean. What you want?
If I was in a jam, yeah, for sure. Stalling, just like, all right, let me get my thoughts together, man. Let's mess with these dudes.
Well, we know Trevor Bauer's going to do that, too. I mean, you're giving the troll of all trolls a good idea. Bump, question one. So Jamal Adams not at mandatory minicamp yesterday, but we found out that it had been excused by Pete Carroll for personal reasons. Do you have any concern about the contract impasse between Seattle and Jamal?
No, I don't. I think the Seahawks know how important this dude is. And they excused him from this camp because of family issues. I'm sure there's some truth to that. But if they didn't understand that he's a professional and he's going to show up, he's going to be in shape, maybe they feel a little differently about this. They understand that this guy did something that DB has never done in all of football last year. I think they understand that once he joined this club, it just looked different. You know, that's why you have to take care of Jamal and Dunlap and Bobby. It just looks different when these guys are on the field. I think they're going to get something done. Now, listen to John Clayton when it comes to the salary cap and all that stuff. There's ways to move money. You're going to predict in 2023 the salary cap will be this. You move money there. You do what you got to do. It's going to get done. But this guy's an all-pro. He don't need to be at camp. Honestly, like he doesn't need to be at camp. Would it be nice for him to be there and to stand there because he's had some surgeries this offseason and not really participate in drills? Yeah, it's a good look, but in reality, you don't need him there. And in reality, I think these guys are going to get the job done with a deal.
Baseball guys, whether it's players, coaching staff, managers, have a term for this. It's called eyewash. Eyewash is when you do something that looks like you're making a difference but doesn't actually matter. Like the dude that always makes sure he shows up 5 minutes early and then spends 15 minutes taping his ankles, like doing nothing in there. Like, that's eyewash, right? Like, you're just doing things that look... Jamal Adams being here would have been eyewash. It would have looked fine. It would have been... But you're right. He's not going to practice. Nobody expected him really to practice. So it was just a, like, hey, are you mad? Are you so mad you're not going to show up? And we got the answer, which is, like, no, it's not that bad. Now, we don't need to draw a line in the sand yet. In fact, we'll just kind of erase the whole potential to draw any line and just say we'll see you in July.
Yeah. You'll be ready to go. Hey, Jamal, you know what to do in cover three? Hey, Jamal, you know what to do on Sam Blitz off the edge? Yeah, he knows what to do. He will be fine. I also want to point out that me and Mora Dooley, I think, were the only two that said he wasn't going to show up to camp when I was on last week.
Well,
and she sent me a text.
That.
She said, we might be right. So, you know, every now and then we get things right. But, yeah, don't worry about
it. It's because of personal reasons, though. Does that count?
That's
true. Paul and I are gonna raise a flag in protest. It's excused. That's entirely different. We weren't talking about excused absences, you two. Rashad Penny is there and not doing much. Pete Carroll said he had a cleanup to take care of some things in his knee. Usually that means an arthroscopic procedure. This isn't great news. He's entering the final year of his contract. Of all the different things that happened yesterday, I thought that was the worst news, which is that Rashad Penny, hopefully he'll be ready for training camp, but he's not out there working right now.
Yeah, I'm concerned for the young fella, right? He's only played in his first year. He played in 14 games and 10 games and 3 games. He's been injured every single year. I think the guy is capable of being a solid number two back, but it's all about, are you going to be available? And he's just shown that he hasn't been. The plus side for him is, who do they have really pushing him? Like, as soon as he's healthy and ready to go, they're going to give him a chance. Still have Travis Homer, Paul's favorite guy. You still have DJ Dallas.
DJ Dallas!
There it is.
What a great name. But what does the game look like? I think Rashad Penny has still shown more than those guys have shown in his little snippet that he's put out there. I'm concerned for him on a personal level and for his future. Like, say he doesn't get back. You know, someone's going to roll the dice on him, but now he's going to lose money. He could be a really good football player, but it's all about staying healthy. And who's going to back up Chris Carson if Rashad is down? We named those two other guys, but you need somebody who's going to be able to produce right now, because we know Chris Carson is going to need a tap on the helmet and take a few plays off. You got to have a guy who can come in and be a Carlos Hyde. I think Carlos Hyde was the perfect number two for Chris Carson because they had the same kind of running style, but you didn't expect him to really take over a game. This is big for Rashad Penny. I hope the young man gets healthy. I think this will be his last go-around with the Seahawks. If he can't show, look, I can be there for at least 14 games this year.
The bright side is, and this isn't to diminish Carlos Hyde's play, because I thought he played well last year, but there will be guys that are around Hyde's skill level that are available. I liked Hyde, by the way, when they signed him, just based off of what he'd done in Houston the year before. He did run for 1,000 yards. But yeah, it is put up or shut up time for Penny, and it is concerning that this knee has been as much of a problem as it's been, because we thought at the end of last year that maybe he's a little shot in the arm as you get into the playoffs, and they pulled the plug on that pretty quickly. And now this offseason, you're looking at perhaps the same knee having the same issues. Maybe this is something that ultimately ends his career, which would be a shame.
Yeah, that would be tough. We talk about him, and we're kind of frustrated, and we're eager to see what he can do. Imagine what he's going through as a player, man. He's living out, trying to live out his dream, can't get healthy, has opportunity. They've been really holding on to him and giving him opportunities to be that number two, and it just hasn't worked out. So he's doing some soul searching right now. Just stay positive. Once you get healthy, if you get healthy, just take advantage, because this is it right here, man. He's got to show he can do something.
He's also had about as clean a bill of health coming out of college as you can possibly have. And to me, that says, for all of the different things people talk about, someone being injury prone or what it is. No, man, you know what's injury prone? Playing football. Yeah. Like playing football. Like that's what's dangerous. And all of these different, when we talk about guys tending to get hurt, yeah, that's the nature of the position. You can't, as much as you can do to prevent injuries, and people talk about that, it's just a brutal game, and that changes the course of dude's career. I remember being there when he broke his finger in his first training camp, and that's kind of where it started and setting him back. It just stinks. It's the nature of the game.
Especially at the RB spot.
Yeah.
I mean, running backs, your shelf life is really four really good years. Either you're getting tackled by 11 guys, or you're pass prone against DNs and linebackers. Like, you're banging heads every single play. So, yeah, it's hard on them.
That's, and what you mentioned there with pass protection, is the reason that Travis Homer's so valuable.
Yep.
Question number three.
Paul totally missed it, not listening at all.
No, I heard it, and we just moved on because we are not
right through
that
the
happen.
Five hole. I went through Gallant's wickets. He got nutmegged there.
What am I supposed to say? Like, do we really need to have a further conversation about a running back who's great at pass blocking? What is he, a left tackle? Anywho, speaking of left tackles, I guess Travis Homer could be the replacement for Dwayne Brown if Dwayne Brown doesn't end up with the team this season, but that's not something that we're thinking about. He showed up for mandatory minicamp yesterday. He is turning 36 at the end of the month. Bump, he wants a new contract. I don't think the Seahawks really have much of a choice here as far as what they do with him, because how do they get that next left tackle, even if he is 36 right now, or about to be 36.
He's still showing he can play at a high level. And if you do not extend Dwayne Brown, there will be more problems with number three. All right, you got him, Gabe Jackson on that offensive line. If you do not make a way to sign Dwayne Brown, whether it be a one-year extension, a two-year extension, that's another reason for him to dip out after the season's over. It's like, you're not keeping my best offensive lineman. It's almost like it feels like he's low-key looking for a reason. You know, let one thing go wrong. Let one guy not get signed that he likes, and he's out of here, man. That's the nature of the business. That's how things go. If he doesn't feel like he's going to be protected, number three, then he can get out of here. You got to sign Dwayne Brown. He's your best lineman. That's your best guy on the line. Yes, he's 36. Big ups, 80s, babies. We're still in the game. All right, but you got to take care of home. And home starts with that offensive line. I say you do what you got to do to keep this guy.
I disagree. Look, Russ, yesterday, he jumped into the middle of Pete Carroll's press conference, and he said that we're all friends. Here's Russ.
Letting everybody know we're still friends, you know.
Hey.
Just messing
with
you.
There you go. Get out of here. You had your press conference.
Not awkward at all. Totally seamless.
Thank you.
The hilarity of it.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
I'm so glad I'm not the only one who, like, cringed watching that. Get out of here, huh? You already had your press conference.
You know what I immediately flashed to, and it's kind of topical now because he just got fired again. You remember when Dwight Howard came out and put his arm around Stan Van Gundy?
Yeah.
After Van Gundy had just gotten finished explaining to the Orlando beat reporters that Dwight Howard wanted him fired. And here comes Dwight, big, like, puts his arm around him. Coach, aren't the rumors of our, like, demise, like, greatly exaggerated? Like, that was that level of awkward. Just awkward. And yeah, Stan Van Gundy just got canned. He's no longer the coach of the New Orleans Pelicans.
Not a good day in basketball for anyone right now.
Bro, I mean, Russ had to do it though, right?
Yeah, there
has to be a public display of affection, right?
I thought there had to be that. The visual was better. I thought the visual, because John Schneider also popped in there.
Schneider's
too.
Is funny. Schneider's got good comic timing. Russ was just cringe. Russ was pure cringe.
But when is he not cringe?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you should do it. You should stay away from that note. You're like, that note just makes me uncomfortable. Here it comes. Cornier, let's ramp it up a little cornier.
You're looking at this all wrong. Everything is fine, peace in our time.
I look at it this way. Okay, we worried about Russ hurting his offensive lineman's feelings, talking about he was frustrated getting hit too much. How about he breaks Dwayne Brown off a little something something? How about he takes care of the Rays? Here's a little something for the effort for you, and then we'll forget about it. Then we'll consider that mess from this offseason cleaned up.
How about every single offensive lineman availability, Russ has to do it for them too? We're friends. It's okay.
What if we came up with a sack bonus program? Like, for every sack that Russ suffers that we administer to the offensive line, we take a little bit out of a community kitty that's been. And the fewer sacks that Russ suffers that are on the offensive line, the more those guys get to divvy up. It'll be like defensive players used to do this for like a turnover pot. Like, everybody chips in. Yeah. The first person to get the sack gets it. It'll be like a rewards program for not allowing sacks. We'll have a big GoFundMe thing that's come in there, and with each sack, we'll just take a little bit away. It'll be a performance. It'll be an improvement plan.
Incentive base. There you go. Throw it in the contract.
That is Blue 42. From the 360, Danny complaining about other people being corny or having cringe moments.
Well, that's, he would know. Irony. He would know. Come on.
That's correct.
Expert.
Yeah. Game recognizes game, I believe, is how they say it when it comes to the corniness factor. We've also got Jim in the 907, who has co-opted and changed. He's got an analogy for Tyler Glasnow's explanation for why he got hurt. The Devil Rays pitcher, or I guess it's just the Rays now, Rays pitcher said that his forearm strain happened because he was having to grip the ball different because he couldn't use his special sunscreen rosin combo to give him sticky fingers. This is Jim's analogy. You're driving down the road at 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, 70 and a 60. Everybody's going with the flow just like it's supposed to be, just like yesterday and just like last week. New day. The rules have changed. They're going to enforce the speed limits. How would you feel as the person who is late for work as it's a big mess on the road due to slowing cars, cars being pulled over, or you get a ticket for doing the thing that you've always done and has always been acceptable to your peers? Here's the problem with Jim's analogy. You've been told beginning in the off season and over the past several years that you guys need to knock it off. You guys need to, you're going too fast. You need to stop doing this. And now there's reports out there that some of you chuckleheads, instead of slowing down, are using so much that balls are sticking to people's hands without them even gripping it. You guys have taken you've taken way too much leeway that we've given you. So we're telling you now that we're going to start enforcing it. So don't come crying to me if you're late for work because you think, oh, I thought it was just going to be like it. We've been telling you idiots that we're going to change.
Is it really that bad now? Right? Technology is the reason why they've kind of said, okay, with the spin rate and all that stuff, they're looking at technology. Could you imagine what it was like 30 years ago when this technology wasn't there?
You know, you could take drugs and use grip stuff.
the game was shady, man. Is this the peak? Is this the peak of these guys using the sticky stuff? I don't think so. I just think now they're able to really identify what guys are doing. And then batters are complaining. Balls are breaking at a rate they've never seen before. Is this really the peak? I don't think so. Guys are just getting caught up now. There's ways to find it.
The other thing is, too, for that analogy that Jim made, speed limits are stupid. You know, like, I understand.
What?
I understand why. Well,
what did you... Speed limits are stupid.
You better not come in my neighborhood going 35 and a 25.
Well, okay,
ball.
But I mean on the highway. I mean, fair enough. I mean on the highway, though. The highway's here. I don't get it. 60 miles per hour? What are we, children? And some people, like, will stick to it. It drives me nuts here. Like, so I think that's dumb. Where this is a legitimate rule because, you know, doctoring the baseball is going to move a little bit differently.
Yeah, Montana sounds like where you'd fit in. I think that was a place that tried getting rid of speed limits on the freeways. Speed limits are a very necessary tool in public safety. I'm not against speeding, but you're making a choice to break a rule. If you choose to speed, you're taking the calculated risk that comes with that, and you might get in trouble. And honestly, if you get caught, I don't want to hear any complaining about you. You made the decision. You pay the price.
Yeah.
Like all those sort of things. The issue... Baseball has an issue with how many balls are being hit in play. I'm not sure that the reason is entirely due to what pitchers are using to grip the ball, but everything that we see is the offensive numbers are down, and the game would be better if there were more balls hit in play. So if that means telling these pitchers that, like, you got to ease off on your Pelican dip grip or your spider tack, you need to ease off it. Yeah, I don't want you putting the sunscreen and rosin. I hurt myself because I can't use my special homemade concoction of sunscreen and rosin. It's not fair.
We can't ignore that it is different throwing a baseball. If you've thrown a baseball a certain way the whole time, you had certain grip, it feels different. It's going to be an adjustment period. You just can't complain because you're getting called out for cheating. You just sound like a baby right now. Like, I understand his struggle because you go from having all the grip in the world to having to adjust. What if you have sweaty hands like me? Like, my hands sweat, the ball's going to slip. There is an adjustment period, but you were cheating. So if you were cheating, you can't come out and complain about anything. You just, you know what, you tuck your tail, you find out ways, rub some dirt on it, do what you got to do, but you can't complain for cheating.
Baseball is at fault for letting it get to this point. But you can't blame baseball going forward for it, right? I mean, you took advantage of baseball letting it get to this point.
Yes, and the other part of it, if Tyler Glasnow has to ease off on his grip and can't throw his curveball as well and it gets smacked around, that's kind of what we want. That's kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's we need to have more hits. And if that's going to hurt you right in your feelings or make you like, yeah, you're going to have to... Welcome to the new reality. Like, welcome to how things are going to be going forward.
I wonder just how many of these guys could throw all of these pitches that they are now throwing with enhancements before that? I mean, at what point does this start? At what point do you start putting the adhesives on your hand? Is this going all the way back to high school and to college? Is it happening at that level? Or is this just something that when these guys get to the pros, all of a sudden, hey, here's a 36-year-old dude in the bullpen who's like, hey, I got... Yeah, let me tell you what, kid. He like raises his trench coat. Look at all this I got here. Here's some spider tack for you. Like when does this become a part of pitching? Because all these guys, I'm assuming, can do it without that extra grip at some point in their life.
I would assume and believe that it gets more nuanced and you get more refined in it. I would say that there's more cheating at lower levels.
Mm.
There's more cheating at lower levels just because there's not as much enforcement, right? But most guys, it's not like cheating guarantees you success. If you're a terrible player and you cheat, you're probably still going to be terrible. It's kind of finding that upper edge. I think guys get more refined and they understand how to use it more and are more effective with it at the higher levels. But it's been part of the game. Like, guys, look, people rub baseballs. Why do they do that? To get it to feel better. People put rosin on their hands. Pitchers are allowed to lick their hands while they're pitching. They just can't do it while their foot's in contact with the rubber. All of these things are basically that idea to affect and enhance... Make the ball feel better in your hand and improve your release. Just so happens when you get a little bit older, you get shown and you try some different things. You find out that, yeah, if I put this little bit of Pelican dip grip right underneath my brim of my hat, and if I get a little too much, then I'll wipe it off on the crotch of my uniform. And now that gives me the super sticky feeling that I really like.
253 says gloves in football. If you wear gloves in football, it does make your hands stickier, but we see drops all day in football. So... put it to baseball, because you make the ball sticky, does that mean do you just enhance your talent? You still have to have talent to throw the baseball to make it break the way you want it to. I mean, what? How much does it really affect? Are we just basing all this off of the numbers from the batters this year? The batters are complaining.
Yes.
So now we're looking at the sticky substances and saying it's way too much.
Yes. I think that's what – and saying how can we juice – how can we get more offense in baseball? How can we – well – Let's have them stop putting all this stuff on their hands. I don't know if that's the primary reason, but if that will get more balls in play. With gloves in football, the issue is fairness, right? If everybody's wearing the same gloves and we like how the game looks, then there's no problem. If any ball that touched your hand stuck to it, like, and all the receivers were doing that, we'd probably like, okay, we got to do something about these gloves. Like, it's that all they have to do is put their hand on the ball and sticks. It depends on whether you like watching the game. I think baseball would be better if there are more balls in play. So we need to make the pitchers worse. We'll keep this conversation going. We've also got three things that Pete's trying to sell us. We're going to tell you if we're buying any of these. That's all ahead here. Danny and Gallant, Michael Bumpus in with us this hour.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Get the most on the Mariners with 710 ESPN Seattle all season.
We got some good texts. Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710, especially about the foreign substances. One guy who was a minor league pitcher said it was a point when control was more emphasized than spin rate, said he had never heard of the sunscreen rosin mixture until he got to the minors, and it's something that was slightly tacky as opposed to really being sticky. The 253 says, so batting averages being down has nothing to do with kids growing up worshiping exit velo or chicks dig the long ball. The fact they practice hitting the ball hard instead of hitting to opposite fields, or maybe that every kid is on steroids in development and then they realize they can't perform without. There's a point. I'm going to take the steroids part out of that. The reason batting averages are down is not entirely or even mostly necessarily due to the sticky stuff being used. It's not. That's probably partly a response to some of the guys uppercutting and having exit velo and launch angle, those sort of studies. The question is, how do you change? If you want more balls in play, how do you get that to happen? And the answer to that might be to increase the number of hittable pitches that you see. Like that's one potential answer. And that means that maybe some stuff that was allowed or looked the other way on for the past 20 years, you change and ramp up, because I don't want to see as many strikeouts as I'm seeing. And maybe if it's easier to hit stuff, guys aren't going boom or bust and just trying to hit home runs.
Or you change your hitting philosophy. I mean, what are these kids being taught at a young age? You know, the texter just said chicks dig the long ball. Man, I've heard that since I was, 12 years old or something like that. I'm sure it's been happening before that. Change your philosophy. Get on base. I mean, everyone's trying to go yard. It's attractive. It's fun. You know what I blame? I blame that 98-99 season when McGuire and Sosa were just going at it. That influenced a generation of people who just want to go yard. What happened to the Ichiro, you know? Where the Ichiro is at? Just slap it into play, get on base, and get some runs. So I think it has to do with guys using sticky substances, athletes getting better on the mound. You have these big 6'6 guys with all this leverage going downhill. And then it's a combination of the batters just trying to hit everything out the park. So a lot of things need to change. Baseball's doing their job with the sticky stuff, but now it's up to the baseball influencers to teach kids, like, look, all right, level swing, let's get the ball and play and get on base.
I think, though, at a young level, it's not necessarily the problem that it becomes once you start to get towards the money-making side of it. I would say just for the average baseball coach at a high school or something like that, they're not going to have a lot of guys who actually can swing for power. So they're going to say, all right, how can I manufacture runs? I know my high school, which did not have a lot of talented players, was always pretty good because they played small ball to a tee. Like, they were really good at that. And I think that the problem is that the next level, and I don't know if it's at college or if it's in the minors or what, but in the majors, there's definitely a different value on what we used to see all the time, those contact hitters, and what we see now. And yeah, just changing spin rate's not going to change that. I mean, people, especially if the spin rate goes down and now all of a sudden you're still able to do the same thing but maybe make more contact and smash those elevated fastballs basically into outer space because it's going to be a little bit easier because there's less movement, then, yeah, I feel like there's more that they need to change to really make this better as far as an overall product.
It's Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus is in with us for this entire hour. Pete Carroll talked to the reporters yesterday. At one point, he was interrupted by Russell Wilson to assure everybody, just to let us know that they're still friends. John Schneider flashed the deuces sign in the middle of that. There are three different players that Pete gave us rosy, sunshiny appraisals of. This is the time for unfettered optimism. Between now and the first games that are played, you're going to hear a lot about how this year is going to be different for this guy, which guy's in the best shape of his career. We're going to go through three different ones. And we're going to tell you whether we're buying it or not. We start with the number three tight end for the Seahawks. Colby Parkinson was, what, a fourth-round pick by the team? Fourth-round pick by the team. This will be his second season out of Stanford. Here's Pete Carroll talking about how he might factor into a tight end group that also includes Will Dissly and Gerald Everett. Here's Colby, Pete on Colby.
Colby's going to be a factor. There's nothing to keep him from being a factor. He's at 6'7", you know, he's got a target that's just obviously unique, but he's got great hands. He's a natural catcher. His catching range is as normal as it can be. He can use it all. Gets off the ground well too when he has to. He's a really bright player. He's picked stuff up. He is, because of the time he missed on the field with us, he really dove into the strength program, and he just pumped up, and he's better now than he was at the end when he became active with us at the end of the year.
You buying it, Bump? Colby Parkinson going to be a factor this year?
A factor? How big of a factor? I think we'll see him on the field. I think he'll get, what, he had two targets last year? I think he'll get more than two targets. But what do you expect Pete to say? He's going to point out all the positives about every player, every chance that he gets. I don't think he's lying. I think he has great range. I think his hands are good. He can get up. He's a tall dude, big target. All that stuff seems fair to me. But what he's not going to say is, man, but we got two really good tight ends in front of him. It's going to be hard to get him on the field. Unless we get down the red zone on the goal line, there's a package for him there. That's the truth about this whole thing. Yeah, Colby can do all that stuff. But you got two guys in front that are proven, so he's going to have to wait his turn.
It would be quite a luxury if he actually ends up being able to be someone who can contribute. But you're right, Bump. He has to actually get on the field. You don't expect him to beat Gerald Everett by default just based off of what you did this offseason in signing him. And in Will Dissly, do you think that he's got the physical tools necessary to beat that expertise in an offseason where Will Dissly didn't have to deal with any injuries? Yeah, that one's an uphill battle.
All right, next guy that we're going to go to, former first-round pick, person once considered to be one of the more physically talented players available in his draft, also should be noted, survived a fall out the fourth story window when he may or may not have been under the influence of synthetic marijuana. Robert Kemdiche. Here's Pete on him.
really good spirit about him. He's upbeat, active. He's explosive and has really good quickness. He's over 300 pounds. He moves really well. He's going to be a real competitive part of this group. And he's a little different than some of the other guys. We see some flexibility in where we can play him and move him around. And I'm hoping for his sake, because he's been out of football for a bit, I'm hoping for his sake that, you know, everything just keeps moving along, because he is applying himself. His mentality is like he's got a second chance on his football life, and he knows that, which is really important, you know, and he's trying to seize every opportunity. And he's been a real not a surprise as much as just we're really, you know, happy to have him as part of this, and we think he's going to be a factor.
If you took out Robert Kimdiche from that and put in Alden Smith, wouldn't you hear a lot of the same things from Pete Carroll on that front? Except for maybe he's a little bit older.
Okay, which guy's going to have more of a contribution this year? Alden, we got the uncertainty about whether or not he's going to be available. He hasn't been present until probably he gets the thing resolved, where whatever happened in Louisiana with him being... Yeah. Last we heard, he was arrested for an assault charge. Who's going to have a bigger impact? Is Kimdiche? He's got the physical presence. They're both really, really prominent former draft picks kind of trying to reclaim their careers.
If a coach described me, or were asked to describe me, and the first thing he said, well, he's upbeat, he's this, he's that, that's bad for me. I want talk about my abilities as a football player. You know what I mean? I want to hear, man, his routes are sharp, he looks explosive. The first thing he goes with to upbeat is like kind of personality thing. That's kind of a red flag for me. Can he help this team? I'm sure he can help in some type of way, but I don't think they're dependent on him right now. Danny, you've heard Pete Carroll speak for years now. You're like the translator for Pete Carroll. I'm putting on my Danny hat, and I hear, yes, we like him, but there are other guys who will probably beat him out.
Yeah, I would say, how was your date last night? She had a great personality. Like, just really fun to talk about, right? Like, that's kind of what that – you're right.
Yeah.
Because when you talk, he's got a great spirit about him. He's really fun and yeah, that's probably a I'm throwing everything out there about what, but I'm not sure we probably got some other guys that are in line ahead of him. Our next we'll continue with the conversation about what happens with the Seahawks and as well as their training camp, but the Seahawks and their offense. How do they fix it? What do they do with their offensive line? And there's one guy who used to be here in Seattle who might have had his star turned yesterday. That's all ahead.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We got Michael Bumpus hanging out with us as well. So as we continue to go through things that we heard from Pete Carroll yesterday and whether or not we're buying or selling what he's got to say. We talked about two guys who are probably not going to make that much of an impact this coming season. Robert Kimdiche, Colby Parkinson. Marquise Blair is different. Marquise Blair was supposed to be the Seahawks starting nickel corner going into last year. Here's what Pete had to say about Marquise and his recovery from injury yesterday.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a great addition. Just everything that we've seen from Keese has just been... He's tough, he's smart, he's fast, he's flexible, and that he can do a lot of things. We're really excited to have him back out. He's, you know, I don't think he's 100% yet, just in terms of the whole comeback, but he's plenty good enough to be practicing and working.
I don't know what to make of Marquise Blair, man. I thought he should have played more as a rookie because all he did was knock people's heads off, and maybe they didn't trust him. We were hoping for big things from him last year, but it was kind of a stretch, right? He was going to be playing nickel corner, which he's a safety. He's always been an in-the-box safety. And then he got hurt and was lost for the year before he really got a chance to get going. I find myself not assuming he's going to do anything. I'm waiting to be pleasantly surprised. I'm not counting on him this year, though.
I'm assuming. I really think this dude is going to help this defense just because of what we saw. And just a snippet last year, Woody got hurt week two against New England, I believe. But he already had a forced fumble, I want to say. I might be wrong, but I feel like he had a forced fumble already. Like, you felt Marquise Blair on the field. The challenge for him is going to be mental. All right, can you put your foot in the ground and drive that knee with confidence and break on the ball like you used to and play with that recklessness? That's what made him special. He's only a buck 85, not a big dude, but the way he played the game aggressive downhill is what made him special. I'm assuming, man, I believe in this dude. I think he's mentally tough. I think he's going to be out there, and I think he's going to be a good player for this defense.
You got diamond hands on Marquise Blair. You were on this last year, too. Yeah.
Yes, my guy.
I love him, and I couldn't have been more excited when they drafted him because I loved the way he played in college and the kind of hitter he was. Where is he going to play? Does he go back into that nickel role? Because you've got Jamal Adams at one safety spot. You've got Quandre Diggs at the other. You've got Pro Bowl safeties. Where does he fit?
Where does he fit? He's the first guy off the bench. He's the sixth man. He's Jamal Crawford. You know, he's the guy who's going to come in and flash for 20, 25 plays, start him off on special teams, going to make a couple big hits there. I don't think he's going to be a guy that you can count on every single down, but he's going to be that changeup every now and then he's going to make a play. You know, I described KJ last week. I said, who's going to make the 10 plays that KJ makes every year that makes you go, all right, boom, that's a KJ play. This is a guy that you need to make about 10 plays every year on the defensive side, a third down stop, a big hit, maybe a tackle on special teams. I think he's going to contribute a lot in many different areas, not just at that nickel spot.
If we're playing old school Madden 2005, he's the guy who you are abusing the hit stick button with whenever he's out on the field because you know just how much he can clobber people. With what you were saying, Bump, one of the big frustrations about last year for him is when he got hurt, because you would think that as the season went along, that was a guy who had a lot of room to potentially improve. Playing in a new position that he's never been at before, at least in the NFL, you would think that, okay, at the end of the year, he's going to be playing about as comfortable as he's ever been at this position, and that's just unfortunately something that didn't happen. I'm optimistic about him, but I also think that you got to look at Ugo Amadi, too, as somebody who probably deserves to play over him at this point in time based off of what we saw from Amadi last year.
Yeah, he's got to earn it, right? He has to earn it. He's injured. Ugo's been there. He's got more reps. That's a good battle to have and a good problem to have. I think both of these guys, it's a big year. Every year is a big year for guys in the NFL if you aren't established, but especially for Marquise, he's coming off an injury. And then you're right, man, Ugo's been out there. So how do they play this? Do they go with the loyalty side of this thing and go, well, Ugo's been there, let's give them the shot? Or do you go off the guy who you think is the better player, who I think Marquise Blair is probably the better player, but you're right, man, Ugo deserves a shot.
Kevin Durant last night, Stanny and Gallant, ooh, Michael Bumpus hanging out with us. We still love him, right? I mean, we he doesn't have that Oklahoma City taint on him anymore, right?
No. He always loved Seattle. I think there's an argument to be made that Seattle loves Kevin Durant more than any sort of area or fan base outside his home, which is kind of Chesapeake Bay area. I think people love KD in Seattle, maybe more than other NBA stops, maybe even more than New Jersey right now, or Brooklyn, whatever you call them. They're the stepchild out here. Everybody's Knicks fans. They love Julius Randle. Yeah, and last night was an unbelievable second half that he put together.
16 of 23 from the field. I believe he was like 4 for 9 from three. And Danny, we talked about this off air. It reminded us of when LeBron took over against the Pistons back in the day. The difference was LeBron was just yamming and dunking on everybody.
Yes.
KD did a little bit of everything. I'm going to go to the rack. He had a mid-range. The mid-range game is back. Thank you, Chris Paul, for bringing that back into the NBA. Mid-range, three-pointers, steals, rebounds. I mean, that was impressive. My guy hit me up, Lavelle Durant, one of the best QB trainers in all the land. He goes, hey, man, was that Jordan-ish? You know what I told him? I said, nah, man, that's Mamba mentality all day.
Oh, boy.
It was in this regard. When you watch a player, there's a lot of players that can get hot in the NBA and give you 25 in a half. They hit their spots.
Jamal Crawford was one of them, who you mentioned just a moment ago, Bump.
And he might give you 50 if he gets hot. It's another thing in a big moment. And that's a series where that's a game five. That's deciding the direction of the series. And the only player that anybody on Milwaukee was worried about was Durant. That's the only guy anybody was worried about. And he's just like, get on my back. I'm going to take you to this. 49 points and a triple-double. It was awesome. It was incredible. And it's because of that, everybody knew that's the guy you have to stop. I don't care about Bruce Brown. I don't care about all these other dudes that are out here. And KD's like, yeah, but you're still not going to be able to stop me.
He made his own bed in this one, but this was one of the first opportunities that he really has had since leaving Oklahoma City to put a team entirely on his back where there's just no chance of any help elsewhere. And I kind of feel from him, even though he made his own bet. I mean, you did go to the team that you lost to, but 49-17-10. He's clearly the second best player in the NBA, and how often have we heard him like legitimately said as the number one guy in the league over the last couple of years? I mean, I've even heard it with Harden. I know we've said it with Giannis, whose game is completely limited compared to that of Durant. And it's a game like last night where you get to appreciate him a little bit more. 49-17-10.
Dude is 7 feet tall and can do anything he wants to on the court. And he played the five spot as well to put some pressure on Giannis on the defensive side. Another Seattle connection, Jeff Green balled out too. He dropped 26, 27 points on him. So, hey, the Sonics, they're there. The Sonics are present on the court in the playoffs.
Jeff Green might be the weirdest player in NBA history. Right?
Why?
He has every single thing that you want. He has just never quite been able to consistently put it together.
He's had a long career, though.
He's
People
been in the
hate on
forever.
Uncle Jeff. Yeah. Uncle Jeff is underappreciated.
Oh, yeah, I agree. It's just crazy that like he's got all these things, and you see, oh, wow, he's doing the same things he was doing 10 years ago. It's Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus, we always love it when you join us every single Wednesday, 8 o'clock, and we'll hear more from you later on this week. Thanks so much, buddy.
All right, fellas, have a good one.
The one and only Michael Bumpus on Danny and Gallant, 710 ESPN Seattle. The Seahawks are going to have to pay some dudes, and it's not just Jamal Adams. Find out who the latest guy, Colin, for more coin is next.